The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Sharon Benton from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. On this program, I will talk with and read about visually impaired people who have achieved success. My guest today is Mr. Donnie Best. Hi, Mr. Best. How are you today?
Great.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, your childhood, you know, how, your family, that kind of thing?
I'll try to keep it straight. having a face for radio. Well, I'm originally from Wilson, North Carolina, and a family of six. And the long part goes towards the end. I'm a retired itinerant consultant and educator, special need educator for Onslow County School System. And I was there for about 29 years, and I moved to Raleigh. Like I said, I had a family. It was from a family of six, and we were closely knit. We went to church a lot, and discipline was something that was acceptable, and it was administered when necessary. So I think that had a lot to do with everything. So that's about it. And if I find somewhere in here to elaborate about it more, I will.
Okay. Yeah. So were you born blind, or was this something that occurred later in?
It occurred later on in life.
Uh-huh. And what happened exactly, if you don't mind? Was it through disease or injury? Or?
Yeah. No, it's through congenital glaucoma.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you attend public school at all?
Not until the latter part of grade school. I attended Broughton High School in preparation for college, something that was very worthwhile. So.
Okay, great. And did you attend the school for the blind as
yes.
well?
Yes, yeah, the Guttermore School here in Raleigh.
Okay, and you went through the whole school?
Through the whole gamut of it. Like I said, the part being for college prep was when Broughton High School stepped into it.
Okay, great. And so you were able to take courses at Broughton, such as maybe Spanish or things that weren't available at Governor Moorhead?
Right, Spanish and some of the high-end, like I said, it was college prep, not only in terms of its content, but dealing with the broader range of abilities and skills of the students and teachers, because it was simply more of them. Classroom settings were different because the numbers were a lot larger. And then adapting to, you know, their pace of covering materials and things like that, and some of the problems that you would probably encounter, and I did, while in college.
Mm-hmm. So where did you attend college?
The high school went to something, then it was called Early Bird at Western Carolina. It was kind of an adjustment thing, which was something else that was needed other than the landscape. It was pretty rough. It was Cullowhee, mm-hmm. which is on the other side of Asheville. Then I went to Winston-Salem State for a year, and then after that I transferred to East Carolina, where I got the BS from, and Bachelor of Science, and then at some point in time, state for further certification.
Okay, great. So when you were in college, did you have any special technology that you were able to use, or did you have special tricks of the trade to make it through your classes?
Actually, the back in that era, accommodation wasn't exactly a household word back then. The technology was there. They had the money. Where I encountered what was to be something that was commissioned by Stevie Wonder, Kurzweil reading machine. They were, which was a substantial machine that it was in the fledgling stages of reading print, and some of the earlier technologies of the Apple computer. But as far as accommodations, no, it was like it was some funding was there with certain things, but it wasn't very broad because I went to Winston-Salem State and then I transferred to East Carolina, mm-hmm. where there was no accommodations really. They flocked me about a mile away from the main drag, and so it's kind of like you couldn't fuss about it. You got in. They didn't, you know, I don't know how many people might know about 10th Street in Greenville, but oh yeah, I crossed that about three to four times a day. Depends how many classes I had. But first of all, I had to, you know, learn how to get there. So there were some accommodations, but nothing like it is now.
So as far as taking notes in class, you relied on Braille and
mainly back then, all through high school. There was especially high school. It was slate and stylus, which is a very primitive way of writing Braille, but that's the way it was done because, like I said, the pace of the students in classes rather accelerated. College, one of the best ways I found for me, and it varies with different people, was a tape recorder that was able to record a lot more than just a regular cassette could, and features like indexing the time and space of the class, which helped me to hear and get to those points. And then for me, once again, I want to reiterate to go back through that and transcribe what I thought was pertinent. And thank goodness I had a good discerning nature as to that, as to, you know, not overdo it or get what was pertinent, and studied just that. But I did transcribe into Braille a lot of the classes and things like that. There was a lot of recordings of people reading material. They did have some textbooks that you could find recorded at that time. But like I said, it hadn't gotten full-fledged technology nor accommodations back those days.
Mm-hmm. So what actually inspired you to become a teacher?
I can go back as far as when I was 7 years old. I'd learned Braille very quickly, and I remember, you know, long years past, saying to my mother that I was going to teach Braille because I learned it so quickly. And well, it runs in my family. There's nurses and educators, principals, that kind of thing. So it was kind of in my DNA in a while, but then it kind of moved to that in that direction. I think I was in psychology at one time and very quickly changed my mind and went with this education thing because I saw where it possibly would lead to.
Okay. So was this inspiration met with many challenges as far as, you know, getting into the actual career of teaching?
Yeah, there was many, many, many obstacles. Points of view from the public, being able to compete with the sighted peers, which is a real big one, being able to actually perform the job, orientation, mobility, learn to get around where you need to go, and because I must have moved a lot on the college campus. It's motivation. You got to want to do these things, because mm-hmm. if it's not, it's not going anywhere. You got to take a lot of risk, you know, dodging vehicles and cars. Nobody's going to walk you for every place you have need to go. So there was a lot of obstacles, and like I said, the public perception can be a very broad one. Since certain disabilities are kind of seen as, you know, the idea is, especially visual impairment or blindness, is about, the idea is as old as literature. You know, I think Oedipus Rex is one of my favorite examples, and there's quite a few in the Bible where it goes back that far. And so to cut through the mindset was a really, really big one. And getting yourself qualified, you had to take this impossible test once you got through education and this kind of thing. And the ongoing thing of learning where you are and wanting to go where you need to go, you know, that, yeah.
So it takes a very special kind of person to be a teacher. Patience would be, I would think, one of the greatest attributes you would have, too.
It takes some patience. But I was in special needs. It kind of goes with the territory.
So about how long did you teach?
All in all, it was 30 years.
Oh, okay. Great. What were some of the deciding factors in making the decision to retire?
my age.
Okay.
I've been doing it for a while, and I was in Jacksonville, North Carolina, which is not what you call the most cosmopolitan area in the state or in the world. And I came in dealing with a program that was started from scratch. And it took a lot of energy, I was so excited and everything like that. And after so much time, the energy you came in with may or may not be there by the time you get through with it all. So it was just a matter of they needed some newer bloods, whippersnappers to come in, and because you get to the part after a while, okay, you done all of this, and I guess William Toffler once says that the rate of change accelerates as you get closer to the present, and so that meant a whole lot of things were coming in, even though the program had grown. It was just me, then I had a staff of 6 people before it was over with. And so I felt very comfortable that everything was in place, way different from when I came in. And I felt that it was done. I was ready to call it quits and move somewhere else where I could just relax and things like that.
Do you ever kind of regret that you've retired, or do you find that you're just as happy right now as you were then?
No, I don't regret it at all. But at the same time, I have to, I think I mentioned to the young kids at Thanksgiving time that, I thought of it as being what I call the Mary Tyler Moore syndrome, where you go to work and you look forward to who you're working with. It wasn't a dreaded thing. Just about was ready to get to your toys, as I called them. I had exposure to a lot of technology as time went on. And just that, having people and an environment and administrations that was very open arms about me being there in the first place. And looking forward to being with the people and sometimes even out of the work setting. It was just something enjoyable. So that had nothing to do with it at all. It was just that the 6 of us, and I made the 4th one that retired, and it's just the next phase you get used to. You say job well done and everything like that, and so let's get on with it.
Okay. So are you continuing to stay active with within the visually impaired community or the disability community?
I'm trying to get it going. For those people who know me, they know me. I describe myself as the reigning king of chill. I'm trying to get started. I've been the mayor's committee.
For?
Disabilities, I think is what it is. Yeah.
Persons with disabilities.
Disabilities, yeah. The mayor's committee. I'm with Friends of the Library. The library that arranges for materials, books, and things to be used for visually impaired, blind, and dyslexic people. There's one or two more in there somewhere. But I know those two main ones. I've gone to some of the meetings of the ACB?
Mm-hmm.
Council for the Blind and Federation for the Blind. I'm also the membership chair of the Governor Moorhead School Alumni Association, Inc. And so I'm trying to keep things going. What I call accessibility issues, that kind of thing I'm still interested in. So, and I have, once again, I have the equipment to organize, and it's, you know, I still like my toys, so it gives me a chance to strategize and put together, collate, and just have a good time doing things that I did when I was working, so I'm doing what I want to do.
So you're able to plan your activities to suit your needs, so you can still have time off to do what you want to do, but yet you can be active in the community. That's the best way to handle it. So do you have any sports activities that you currently participate in, or did you in the past?
Not really. I really wasn't crazy about sports, except for at one time while in college, I really got into weightlifting. At one time, it was just, it wouldn't have done you any good to bring a picture, but I had one that when I was, and it's just, I really got into that big time. But when I was in college, it was, they had me labeled as the, I was the tandem bicycle thing, swimming, as long as I was moving, and weightlifting, every little thing that they would come out, they really did a wonderful job of accommodating me as far as this person who wanted. They were pretty much fascinated by the whole thing, that I'd really cranked up and worked a whole lot in college, and really enjoyed it. And it was quite rewarding. It's a rewarding thing, yes.
Great. Well, tell us a little bit about your gift of music. What type of music do you like to perform? What instruments do you play?
Okay. Well, I was rather busy in church for about 15 years. We had Abundant Life, Baptist International Cathedral in Jacksonville. And there I worked for about 15 years, it seems like, as a percussionist in the, it was about an 8-piece band they had there, and the choir and everything like that. We got some major acts, international people to come there. It was nice being part of that and backing people up that came to the church, that kind of thing. Before then, I was into. I like to say that I upheld the stereotype, but as a vocalist for years and for a long time as a kid, and was in talent shows and. Recitals and a band that I was very proud of that was called 7 Day Soul in the 70s that we did a lot of travel. We did the college circuit and this kind of thing, and it was a lot of fun, camaraderie and things like that. So my family all played, just about the guys, and it was four of us, and we all played some kind of horn. At Gunmore High School, they had an orchestra where I played cornet, trumpet, and French horn and that kind of thing. So back those days, music was what, probably athletics or sitting at a game board or today type thing. But a lot of time was spent into that, and it was worthwhile.
And you were also a participant and a runner up in the Blind Idol last year.
I don't know if I'm trying to forget that or not.
I personally thought you did a fine job.
Thank you. Well, thank you. You're very kind.
So what kind of goals did you set for yourself in your career? Did you have anything you really wanted to start out, you know, making sure that you accomplished before you got ready to retire?
Other than the program met several needs, such as not only to educate, but to eventually that they would find jobs, which is something that concerns me a lot. If you look at the numbers, that kind of thing, to have a program that one could come up with a plan or a strategy and be carried out, and they would get the end result instead of having to run to a wall and change a course, that kind of thing. And it was for not only what they called a standard course of study or future-ready kids, but ones that may have had mental deficits and things like, and different other things, because a lot of times the kids I dealt with were multi handicapped. And just to make sure that it was covered through, not only for them to go through school, but it was going to be something that's going to be worthwhile when they got through, and that they would find employment and success. So that was something that was done, and to change some of the mindsets of people. I had my Donnie Best fan club. When I walked down the hallways, I went to a lot of different schools. And my job was itinerant. That's why they say that, itinerant. I was just going around in different schools a whole lot. And it's just the idea that these kids would encounter this and realizing that I'm part of this small minority. But yet, through it all, in this majority of these thousands of kids, that they would see someone going through this, and who knows, it may change their view and make it easier for someone else. But my whole thing was being realistic and getting the kids prepared for their future and employment.
So did you feel that you were able to accomplish these goals? And if not, what are you doing today to try to help other students today?
No, actually it was met. We had several success stories, different gamuts, from ones that had mental deficits, but they still, and had other disabilities as well, to find employment. They actually did. I had honor students that were in what they call, I've got the appropriate name for stands now. I don't know what it's called now, but anyway.
the business enterprise.
Yeah, the business. Oh, there you, thank you. The business enterprise. We had those. We had college graduates. And there was one that was a psychologist. Got a master's degree in that. And there was some, like I said, that had multi-handicaps, but they still found employment. And to get them to realize that, I think once they realize that how the challenges it would be, I had one student to tell me he understood that why I was the way I was after going out to the world, and he told me that he understood why I was the way I was. I was real. A lot of the parents knew I was real strict. I didn't allow a lot of excuses and discipline. It's something that's still needed, and they should be subject to it as well if required. So not as much. I'm more interested in adults type things now. We did reach those goals.
And now that you're retired, do you kind of engage in new technology and gadgets and things like that are useful to the blind?
Always. I've been blessed to have technology from college days on. Ran to my first principal was just really a computer dude. He was just, he drove me from Jacksonville to Raleigh to see what was available. Even when maybe the agency that was supposed to have done that did not. So I had, and my guardian angel, I called Dr. Brenda Scott, this ergonomics thing. She was really big on that. But I was always given the latest technology. It made the job easier and a lot of fun. And I still have these things. I have a work room. It's a nice way of saying an office at home, and I have all my little toys in there, and it still makes me happy to get in there and just create and write and contact and this kind of thing. So, oh yeah, it's so much. I wouldn't have believed that some of this stuff would be possible as it is now with the iPhone. That's for everybody, which is a good thing. It's mass produced. So it's amazing. If the thing was just for blind or visually impaired people, it would be thousands of dollars. It would be. Trust me, I've seen it all. But that is the case. There's just a lot of stuff that makes life really exciting.
So do you have other gadgets and things that you use that aren't specifically for the blind? Any home devices or anything?
No, you're like everyone else. There's Miss Thing, Alexa, and there's the iPhone, which Steve Jobs might have been a tyrant, but they wanted to get the best computer to the hands of everybody, and he was inclusive by all stretch of imagination. He was inclusive to bring in everybody. I mean, it's not a population I know of that cannot benefit from the iPhone, iPad, and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It's just
It kind of opens the world up.
Yeah, it does. A friend of ours said to me once, and I thought I was on the nut in the world, but she said that, you know, all this technology and everything, being blind is not that bad.
It's easier today than it was 50-some years ago.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So it made me, some of the stuff, I mean, somebody asked me, did I have an app? What had the iPhone done for me? And I told him that it's kept me from getting married.
Okay. We'll just leave that there. So what are some of the benefits of staying in tune with some of the modern technology? What do you find fascinating by it?
Oh, God. Turning it on. actually, it is the word processing. Especially with Braille displays, that thing just, it does it for me. It's amazing. It's not a day that goes by that I'm not reminded of how it has enhanced my life, empowered is a better word, how it has empowered my life, keeping track of records. I mean, how quickly I can go through mail now and keep all my personal stuff to myself. Not needing someone to necessarily be around all the time, labeling things, barcode reading, once again, like I said, that marriage thing, if somebody gets mad at you, you can just say, well, heck, I can find my own bottle of Shout if I want to, you know. I don't need you for that. But it's just a whole gamut of things, even down to Dyson. Vacuum cleaner. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a toy to me. I mean, I found myself all in the vents, sucking up everything I could, because not having that car, that's just it's amazing to me. But anyway, it's Alexa, Fire Stick, Apple TV. Oh, God, it just goes on and on and on, and it's just how things. It's about like when I asked my grandma if. They would come up with this television thing one time, and she said, no, they would never invent something you could see and hear at the same time. That's how I feel about a lot of stuff that I deal with. It's amazing. It's just, I never thought it would get to this point.
So how would you, after having had a career and retired from it, how would you define the meaning of a successful career?
Well, you put a lot of stock into retirement. It's a blessing to say that you have made it there. Because you get some, the Bible called fiery darts coming at you a lot of times, and you had to put those out and duck them and everything else. The fact that I did find gainful employment, realizing that the blessing of having that, because everyone hasn't been successful, and that's the main thing.
Well, thank you very much. We've run out of time for today's episode of Connect to Success. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Sharon Benton from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is ready available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions, please send comments or anything. Please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for joining us.